joining me here on this Monday, August 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next probably hour and a half or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we bring back the daily shows of Bang the Book Radio. Plenty of great stuff coming your way now. Excuse me, if I can actually hold my voice here as we get back into the daily shows, but plenty of great stuff coming your way now through the end of the college basketball season. We've got several guests that are going to join us on a weekly basis. We've got some other guests that'll pinch hit for us, other guests that may become weekly guests as we go throughout the show over the next several months. So really looking forward to this. It's been a very long summer. Those of you that have been listening along with the Bettors Box, thank you so much for doing that. Football drives the bus in this industry. We all know that that's the case. So very happy to get back to talking a lot of football, both college and the NFL here over the next several weeks. Few things I want to bring to your attention here before we go to our first segment today with Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible, and then later on in the show, we'll chat with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. The first is that now the shows will be recorded live. Over the summertime when we were doing the Bettors Box, doing the Tuesday Takeover, I would pre-record them and then just post them. Now the shows will be live. Generally speaking, it'll be 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern time recording window. We usually wind up going over that 12 o'clock window. If you're listening to the live stream, sometimes it will cut off there at noon. It all depends on what our guests look like, what our show quantity looks like for that day. Sometimes I will schedule the show to run a little bit longer. But whatever you do miss, and if you can't listen live, you can hear the full show over at bangthebook.com. Every day I post a recap article that describes what we talked about, who the guests were, all that type of stuff. There's a link to listen to the show and also a link to download the full show right there in that recap article. You can also subscribe to our Bang the Book Radio feed on iTunes. You'll get the shows there. The quickest way to get the show is over at bangthebook.com. Now, obviously, right now with the preseason going on and all that, maybe not as time sensitive, but once we get into the season, we start talking about some of those Thursday night NFL games or some of those weeknight college football games. You're going to want that information as quickly as possible. So bangthebook.com, going to be the best place to get that. Now, another thing that we do here with the show is that after the show is finished recording, I download it and then I edit the segments. I cut them down. I fix some of the audio quality issues that we have here through Blog Talk Radio. And then I repost the segments individually, both at bangthebook.com and then also on our Spreaker channel. So you can get the segments at bangthebook.com and Spreaker, full shows at bangthebook.com, on iTunes, and then also at Blog Talk Radio. So one of the things that you will notice here on the show is that some of our segments are pre-recorded. Sometimes guys can't record in the morning, whether they have other day jobs or they just have things going on. So I'll play those segments. Sometimes the volume may be a little bit low. Sometimes the volume may be a little bit high. We'll have to sort of guess and check a little bit here as we get back into the swing of things. But if that is a problem, please let me know. You can always reach out to me while I'm doing the live recording at Skating Tripods on Twitter, or you can reach out to the official at Bang the Book Twitter account. It's going to be the best way to reach me. If there's something going on with the show, if you can't hear the show, if you know one of the recorded segments is playing too low, please let us know. And of course, like I said, you can get each individual segment after the show. So if there is something you miss, if there is something that gets cut out, then that's something that you can fix after the show is finished. So just wanted to throw those things out there for you because I know that it feels like it's been a long time since we've been on the air with the daily shows going all the way back into early April. But you know, I just wanted to let you know that there are plenty of ways to get Bang the Book Radio, not just with listening live, but by recording live, we are able to update things in real time and stuff like that. And of course, also it helps because the lines are current as we're doing the show. Sometimes when you pre-record the night before, you know, there can be a significant line move overnight or in the morning based on an injury or some other type of situation. So it certainly helps us here to have this live recording window. Now, as far as guests go for the show, on Mondays, we'll have Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible and Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. On Tuesdays, we'll have Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. Now, if you'll recall, we were sort of pushing our Tuesday show as a Tuesday meeting edition of Bang the Book Radio. Tuesday meeting is a group of professional handicappers and bettors that get together on Tuesdays out in Las Vegas, and we had Sports Cheetah on that show. Well, this year we'll have Sports Cheetah on Wednesdays. He has a scheduling conflict on Mondays, so I can't record with him. He can't do mornings. Therefore, we're going to have Sports Cheetah on Wednesdays here with our Hunting for Winners segment. And then on Thursdays, we'll have Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com Also, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Then on Fridays, we'll have our Super Contest segment. We're still working out the format for that. And then we'll also hear from Brent, the odds maker over at, or the bookmaker, excuse me, over at DSI Sportsbook. So that's the format that we're going to have here week after week. Obviously, we'll have some changes. We'll have some people pinch hit, all that type of thing. But we'll still be bringing you plenty of great Bang the Book radio content here throughout the college football and the NFL seasons. And we will also chat NBA, college basketball, NHL, Major League Baseball as time permits here on the show. And then, you know, once football's done, obviously we go full time to basketball and the NHL. So we're going to have you covered here over the next several months, basically over the next 8 months here on Bang the Book Radio. So we're very excited about that. Very excited about the direction of the site, you know, increased traffic on all of our articles, on our radio shows here as well. So things really looking up for us, and we're hoping that we can help you have a really big football season here. And certainly if you listen to the guests we have on the show, check out the content that's over at the website. We think that we'll be able to set you up for a lot of success here so that you can bang the books this football season. So with that, we'll go ahead and get into today's first segment. I recorded yesterday with Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. We talked about some of the new coaching changes in the NFL, how some of the players that are on those teams fit into these particular schemes. Then we also looked at some of Joe's preseason futures. He's got a couple of win totals in the mix, a few division winners, and then also a play on the Super Bowl. So without further ado, here's that segment with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. All right, we're going to go ahead and bring in our first guest for this week. That is Mr. Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible for a segment that during the season we'll call our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football Preview. But here we're just going to talk some preseason stuff, look ahead to the 2017 NFL season. But here's Joe Everett. Joe, how's it going, man?
Great. It's been a good summer, and I've been great listening to your shows and reading the content at Bang the Book, man.
Well, yeah, and for those that are wondering, Joe will be writing his college football totals piece again over there at bangthebook.com for this season. A lot of good insights there. With that, Joe, of course, a member of the Professional Football Writers of America, also the Football Writers Association of America. So a couple of really impressive accolades there, Joe. Why don't you tell our listeners what they can expect from you from a written standpoint here as we go throughout the football season?
Well, yeah, beyond my content at Bang the Book, at NFL Draft Bible, I'm coordinating all the draft prospects there and scouting reports. I coordinate the big board that we have, all our rankings, over 1,000 players ranked in last year, and I know we're going to hit that and go over again. We've also got a prospectus, the top 100 players in college football, regardless of class, regardless of position. That's available at NFL Draft Bible. And then, of course, my fantasy football commitments at Fantastics. We've got, I think, you know, one of the leading software products there for preseason as well as in-season rankings. A lot of written content there as well as just a program that'll help take you to the top of your fantasy league. So, yeah, check out Fantastics if you get the chance, as well as NFL Draft Bible.
Well, and Joe, what I love about you and what I love about having you on the show here, you know, a lot of our guests are handicappers and professional bettors. You're not, but you're somebody that's constantly analyzing the game, constantly analyzing individual players, both from a draft standpoint. Then you do a lot of individual player stuff for Fantastics. So, you know, I think our listeners can get a really good edge on some of the more in-depth, you know, technical elements of football. And that is something that I really love about your segment here and what we're able to talk about. And I think that's a good segue into what we want to discuss here to open up some thoughts on the NFL season. You know, we talked last week with Colin Wilson about, you know, some of the college football teams that have made some changes. And of course, 2 weeks ago, we chatted with Brad Powers about tempo changes for a lot of different teams. We've got some scheme changes in the NFL this year, some new head coaches. And I want to get your thoughts on this from watching a lot of college football, from watching a lot of NFL. You know, we think about scheme changes in college football as being really significant because you've got 18 to 22 year old kids. They're going through classes. They're going through the process of growing up and going from boys to men, so to speak. So we think that, you know, scheme changes and coaching changes are much, much different for them. And in a lot of respects, they are. But do we kind of take for granted the fact that, you know, a lot of us probably believe, hey, these guys are professionals. It's easy for them to just go into a different playbook, different language, all that type of thing.
Well, it can take time. And there's just some guys, hey, it may be a scheme they played in college, or they played when they were first in the league as a rookie, and then now it's changed back to something else. Like, I look at your Cleveland Browns, how many times they flip-flopped from 3-4 to 4-3 to 3-4. Now they're back to 4-3 with Mr. Robinson on the block. But I'm looking at this, or Greg Williams, rather. It's so much more crucial in the NFL, get those players' histories and see how they adapt to some of these changes, because, I mean, that is the basis of everything. I mean, people wonder why some quarterbacks don't see the field initially. It's just they can't catch up to the verbiage, and I think it happens on the defensive side as well as the offensive side. There's just a learning curve that exists. It's prevalent. It's there, and I think, you know, preseason, I try not and get too bogged up with stats and these wow plays and distracted with that. Is just I'm staring at these linemen, seeing if they can comprehend that playbook, and I mean, who's running with this first team, who's running with those second teams, and that's what I'm really trying to get out of preseason. And yeah, some of these scheme changes, I think I'm just jumping into it. Los Angeles Chargers, this is difficult for me to say, even in the show notes I sent to you, I know I typed San Diego Chargers, but be that as it may, I think this is one of the scheme changes that this could be huge for the Los Angeles defense. Gus Bradley going over there, bringing his version of Jacksonville defense. And just as I mentioned, players that have played this scheme before. Well, Joey Bosa, this is what he played at Ohio State. This is his home, is at defensive end, off the wide base with his hand in the dirt, just going mano a mano against a tackle and not a guard, or not facing a double team. Having Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa at these ends for Gus Bradley will be, I think, a coup. It's, you know, this is the league today. It's carbon copy. Everybody wants that Seattle defense. From Atlanta to Jacksonville, the 49ers are going to be running it. And now the Chargers, I think that's the big thing I'm going to be looking at preseason. How does the defense adapt to this? I think they've got talent at linebacker. Denzel Perryman was a stud at Miami. Jatavis Brown, former MAC Defensive Player of the Year at Akron, a big fan of his. And they've got some talent at cornerback with Verrett and Hayward, and also drafted Desmond King, the Thorpe Award winner in 2015. So I think this Los Angeles Chargers mix, say what you want on offense. I think offense is going to be kind of status quo with Kenny Wisenhunt still there. But that's probably one of the most exciting things in the preseason I'm looking at, Adam. How do they adapt to Gus Bradley's scheme? They're not going to look like Seattle, but they're going to be pretty doggone good.
I think it's a really interesting team to bring up here right out of the chute with a team like San Diego. And ironically enough, another team we're going to talk about here is Buffalo, because San Diego picks up former Bills interim head coach and run game coordinator Anthony Lynn to be the head coach. So this is a really interesting dynamic because – you know, when you look at things in the NFL, the head coach, you know, usually has say over pretty much everything. But in this situation here with the Chargers, you've got Anthony Lynn, who's obviously very inexperienced, but then two very experienced coordinators in Wisenhunt and Bradley. So in that respect, you know, how do you think things are going to run here in San Diego? I mean, do you feel like this is a thing where Lynn can come in here and say, okay, I've got two guys I can rely on. You know, I understand I have some growth to do. Is this a thing that actually helps San Diego more than hurts them?
I think it does. I think they go into their strengths. Like you mentioned, these two strong coordinators, I think it takes pressure off of Lynn. He can, you know, delegate certain responsibilities, and you could not complain about having a veteran quarterback like Phil Rivers to ease this transition. So I think maybe it's a little similar to what we saw in Dallas or currently are seeing. Like, I very little with Jason Garrett, but I love his coordinator, Scott Linehan, and then Rod Marinelli. I think those are two of the best in the business, and this is kind of what I see as a similar scheme. It does stink that Forrest Lamp is out for the year with that torn ACL. I know they were counting on him to start, but maybe they move my boy from Indiana, Dan Feeney, into the lineup. Either way, there is still experience there, and boy, if Keenan Allen could just stay healthy for 16 games, this is a team that easily is going to have a winning record and be vying for the division there.
One of the things I want to touch on with the Chargers here, and I don't want to spend too much time on them because I want to make sure that we're covering everything that we want to discuss here in this segment. And then, of course, also, you know, we have a few more preseason segments to chat with Joe. But the tight end situation for the Chargers, you know, I've been reading Warren Sharp's football guide, which is absolutely terrific. For anybody out there that doesn't have that, it is a phenomenal piece of information. There's a ton of great stuff in there. But one of the things that he talked about a lot early in his magazine is the importance of tight ends now in today's NFL. We're kind of seeing a rise of the running back, at least the, you know, workhorse running back, kind of coming back into the fold. For a long time, it's been a quarterback-driven league, a very pass-happy league. But now we're seeing, you know, more two tight end sets, more running the football, more throwing to the tight ends. So look at the Chargers here. You've got Antonio Gates, who's obviously, you know, heading into the twilight of his career. You've got Hunter Henry, a guy that has a lot of upside there at that position. I mean, is this a Chargers team with a win total right now sitting 7.5, the over -150 over at DSI Sportsbook? Is this a team that can go 8-8 or better despite playing a really tough AFC West?
It is a difficult division, two tough defenses in there, but I still see them very close to the 8-8. It'd be nice to get the over 7.5, and but the books have got it right where it should be. I see them as a 500 team or better. Once again, a lot of it hinges on health there, but this is a team that has a lot of talent at the right spots. And on your topic of tight end, yeah, we just saw the tip of the iceberg with Hunter Henry last year. The kid got 8 touchdowns, and he wasn't even a full-time player. So and they have yet to unleash, in my opinion. And, yeah, you're seeing it across the league. Say if the Patriots started or they didn't start it, they've always had those two tight ends. They've sought to get two strong tight ends, and you got to have a strong blocker, a guy that can do both. And now you have to have that Hunter Henry, Jimmy Graham, or Delonte Walker, these H-backs that flex out, and they're just basically faux wide receivers posing that mismatch. It is very in vogue in the league today.
And I think a really good example of this is how the Browns used a first-round pick on David Njoku, because that's the same type of player that he can be, you know, and be a really good asset there in that, you know, Hugh Jackson-led offense that does like to run the ball, likes to run up the middle with some guys, likes to run sideline to sideline with others. I mean, we saw it, you know, in Cincinnati with what he had with guys like Gio Bernard and Jeremy Hill. You know, you kind of have that thunder and lightning type of backfield. You mix in a tight end that can go out there and catch the football for you. That's a really good asset for teams to have. So I do think that, you know, the Chargers, obviously with that juice, the market is ahead of the curve on this. But I do think that they are a team that could surprise, despite being, you know, with a lot of redwoods, so to speak, out there in the AFC West. Let's touch on the Buffalo Bills here, another team that you've got relatively high hopes for this season. I mean, their season win total, 6.5 -125 on the over at DSI Sportsbook. But another one of these situations, you've got a young head coach in Sean McDermott. You've got very experienced coordinators in Rick Dennison and Leslie Frazier. Does this kind of fall into the same umbrella then as San Diego for you?
The situation I wanted to make the listeners aware of, that this is going to be an upgrade, I think, on both fronts. Say what you want about Rex Ryan. I look at his whole situation as dysfunctional. Bringing in Rick Dennison, who's been offensive line coach for years in Denver, this is basically Mike Shanahan's offense. He's going to bring in LeSean McCoy, fitting in a zone blocking scheme, just makes my mouth water. I'll tell you that, because in this situation, you've got Tyrod Taylor as that complement, and the zone blocking scheme just doesn't work unless you have that mobile threat at a quarterback who has those options, the naked bootlegs, delay screens, what have you, on the other side, on that backside of the play. Those defenders have to stay honest now. And if LeSean McCoy and Tyrod Taylor freeze backside defenders, they're going to have a strong running game. That's what goes without saying. And Leslie Frazier, I think Tony Dungy, he ran the cover two. Sure, Sean McDermott, he's famous for this cover three, lots of drop zones. I think that both these guys' thinking and schematics are going to blend and mesh really well. I just think, more than anything, if I'm watching anything in the preseason for the Bills, how that defensive line is now just single gapping. They're not going to be worried about this 3-4, less responsibility for guys like Darius. They still got Kyle Williams coaching the field. Their pass rush, I think, is going to be even better this year, just because it's going to be so much more simple. There's no exotic blitzes and stacked fronts. Some things Rex Ryan did were very cavalier. I think that most listeners will already probably know that, but they're going to be a lot more by the book. I think a much more consistent Bills team is what we're going to see this year.
Now, in looking at San Diego and in looking at Buffalo, you know, as you look up and down the two deep and even down to the three deep, which is something that we will talk about here in future shows with all of our guests as we talk about the NFL preseason, it looks like depth is a concern for both of these teams. So in that respect, Joe, do you feel like maybe they're a year away because of depth opposed to the coaching and the schematic changes? Or do you feel like maybe they're a year or two away because there are still some holes. They need to do some things in free agency in the draft to bring in players that are a better fit.
I could see Buffalo being more a year away than San Diego, just for simple, you know, got rougher division. They've got those nasty Patriots to deal with. And also, looking at the O-line, I mean, their second-line players, Vladimir Dukas, Cyrus Kwanjo, these are still guys not yet ready to take the leap. And Chantrell Henderson, where have you gone? Yeah, I'd say the Bills might be a year away. I still do believe San Diego, they're not to be messed with this season.
All right, well, we got a couple of teams that you don't really like here from a coaching and a schematic standpoint. We'll begin, because apparently this is a really Buffalo-heavy show, with the Jacksonville Jaguars and former Buffalo Bills head coach Doug Marrone. You know, we kind of saw this coming in Jacksonville. I mean, the writing was obviously on the wall for Gus Bradley. They bring in Doug Marrone to, I think they made him the offensive line coach, but really his job title should have been head coach in waiting, because it was pretty obvious that that was the direction that they were going to go. So that is the direction that they wind up going. What do you think about this fit, and is he the kind of guy that can actually make Blake Bortles look like a competent NFL quarterback?
I like Marrone. I'm a big believer of Fournette, but I still hate this offensive line. And this guy was promoted from O-line coach. You'd figure a few more pieces would have brought in. I know they had the immediate retirement of Brandon Albert, but I still don't know that he was any kind of solution. Cam Robinson, I know he was from Alabama and all this. I think he's going to struggle out there at left. And if Parnell's going to be this starting right tackle, Wofford can. This is a lot of bums. This line is still very reminiscent of the trash heap from Fraggle Rock. I don't know. Marrone can talk all he wants about running run the ball every single play. I just don't see anything but a lot of three and outs here from this offense. It's interesting, you know, the offensive line coach now is Pat Flaherty. He was from the Giants. He coached two Super Bowl offensive lines. So this guy's got some major cred. Fournette is a star, but he's got his work cut out for him. You can draft the best running back in the league and all this and that. You can't draft the Dallas Cowboys offensive line. I just don't know where they're going to get this running game. And that's what I'm going to be – my eyes will be glued to, Adam, is see how much they're struggling up front for Jacksonville, because it's a shame. There's a heap of talent on the defensive side of this team, but I think it's all for naught.
Well, and per usual, I mean, we have another situation, and this has happened year after year after year, where people have bought into the talent for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and there is a lot of talent here. I mean, you look at both sides of football, like you mentioned, the defense is very strong. You've got two good wide receivers in Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee. Allen Hurns is a very good player. You know, you add Fournette to the mix. I mean, there's so much here on this team to like, and yet they can't put it all together. And their season win total right now is sitting at DSI over 6.5, -160. So very heavy juice here. That number effectively an over 7, because about 50 cents for each half win in the season win total market. So, again, we've got this situation where you're looking at the talent, you're looking at what Jacksonville has, but it sounds to me, Joe, like you don't think that Doug Marrone is the guy that can maximize it and actually push this team to the ceiling that's expected of it.
I just don't see it. There's so many limitations, and we talked about teams that have depth or lack depth, and this is the lack category. They really don't have anyone behind their front liners on the offensive line, and if they get a few injuries up front, it's going to be tough sledding at linebacker, too. I know Paul Posluszny always has his injury issues. Telvin Smith is still scrawny, and Miles Jack, where he's at with the rehab from the knee, I certainly hope he gets back to where he was at college, but that's the rumor. Maybe he doesn't. And I think depth will hurt them, and I just don't know that Doug Marrone's the guy. This is still the same guy that just pulled up stakes, took his tent down the road in Buffalo and retired, left the team.
And the amazing thing about it, too, you know, you talk about a team like the Chargers who, you know, we're talking about some upside for them. We're talking about some ceiling for them. While they're in arguably the hardest division in the NFL for the upcoming season. And then you've got Jacksonville, who's in probably the weakest division as we head into the 2017 season. And still, you know, I think that maybe that's influencing the market a little bit in terms of looking at the relative strength of Houston, Indianapolis, and Tennessee. But there's really no excuse for being as bad as Jacksonville's been with a division where 9-7 probably gets you into the playoffs.
No, that's the division is trash, but some of the division, some teams you catch up, they have tons of problems with the Texans and playing the NFC South this year is going to be an issue. Starting the season off with the Patties. I hate to say it, and listeners are like, well, this is boring, but it is the same old Jags in my eyes.
All right, another team that you don't have really high hopes for here, and hopefully this will be the year we're seeing Los Angeles Rams gets a little bit easier for us, but that is the Los Angeles Rams, who hire Sean McVay. And I think that there are some positive elements to this hire. You certainly would think that a guy like McVay, you know, should be able to maximize the potential of somebody like Jared Goff, who obviously struggled in his rookie season, but it doesn't seem like you're so sold on the fit.
I kind of like McVay. It's just, once again, this is a tough roster, tough situation to take in, and a lot of change going on. There is one aspect of this whole team that's going to be great, and there's few coaches you can bank on the NFL from a coordinator perspective. Wade Phillips, now that's a bona fide defensive savant. Everywhere he's been, San Diego, Dallas, Houston, Denver, it doesn't matter. Their scheme has dominated. His scheme is one of the few, I think, that's transcendent. He just finds ways better than any coach to maximize players in the right spot. Just find one job a player could do well. Where does he win? I'm going to put him there. It's just I think he's one of the best defensive-minded coaches there's in today's game. And Aaron Donald in the system, this could be very, very interesting. Just dominating double teams. And if there's a guy who maximizes his abilities, it's Aaron Donald. I mean, he can break off a double team like no other. So that's the exciting part. It's just the other side of it. McVay is going to make his money seeing Jared Goff. That's just, there's no two ways about it. Like, that is officially his job. Todd Gurley could go off and fall in his face for all anybody cares. If McVay fixes Goff, then, yeah, he is the official quarterback whisperer. But it's just too tough a sell. And good thing they got Andrew Whitworth from the Bengals. But even then, this guy is really old, struggles with speed rushers. I'm seeing some rough stuff here in L.A. But I will say, on that tight end subject, again, this is another guy, McVay, having success with Jordan Reed in Washington. First thing he does is draft Gerald Everett out of South Alabama. So they've got a couple of tight ends that are very interesting to watch this year. But for all the exciting little elements they may have, once again, watching up front and how they're able to run the ball, if they can run the ball, is a huge question mark. And where Goff's at in this whole progression, that's unfortunately how McVay's going to be judged.
I'll tell you another hire I really like on the defensive side here is Joe Barry. You know, I thought Joe Barry did some very good things when he was in Washington. I think that's a great move for them as the linebackers coach, especially to be somebody there with Wade Phillips, who, let's be honest, I mean, Wade Phillips has been around the NFL for 40 years. Who knows how much longer this guy's going to want to keep being a defensive coordinator, how long he's going to want to keep being a coach. So maybe Joe Barry here, kind of a defensive coordinator in waiting, if Sean McVay is, like you said, able to get something out of Jared Goff and really push him in the right direction. I will say this, you know, a lot of emphasis is going to be placed on Goff. A lot of emphasis is going to be placed on McVay and the Rams with a season win total over 5.5 -130. So another one juice to the over there over at DSI. I really like this stable of backs, man. Obviously you like Todd Gurley as long as he's able to stay healthy. I think Aaron Green out of TCU, a really versatile guy, a guy that can catch passes out of the backfield, a guy that can really help Goff out, you know, if he's able to be that third down back. Are we maybe, you know, looking at this Rams team, and like you said, the defense is the clear strength, and there's no question about that, but are we maybe undervaluing the offense a little bit because, you know, Goff in year one was such a disappointment?
I think so. And because Todd Gurley last year was a letdown, he had a bit of a sophomore slump, easy to say, and also the transition and wide receiver, Their number one guy technically was Kenny Britt, and they bring in Robert Woods. Where he's going to be at in this scheme is anybody's guess. I just think it's the changeover, the letdown factor of last season, and it's causing them to be underrated. But once again, it's pretty gnarly defenses in this division. It's still going to be – that's a tough number to get to where they're at. If it's 5.5, even if it's just 5, I'm tempted to just – keep undering on these Rams. Sean McVay, he's got his work cut out for him.
I want to ask you this as kind of a general point, and then we'll get into some of the futures that you're looking at and some of the things that you've locked in here as we head into this season. But as I mentioned at the top of the segment here, you know, we've looked at the NFL as a quarterback-driven league, and now we're starting to see a lot more running back involvement. Again, we're starting to see running backs with 300 carries a year. Do you feel like maybe we're going to kind of shift a little bit to the point where, You talk about some really good defenses in this division. You talk about the Rams being a really good defense as well. We've been told defense wins championships. When you looked at last year's Super Bowl, that wasn't necessarily the case. Do you feel like maybe we kind of see a little bit of a shift this year where maybe games are a little bit lower scoring? You've got, you know, teams that are running the football more, teams that are throwing short to the tight ends over the middle of the field. Do you think maybe we could see a little bit of undervalue in the NFL from a game total standpoint?
I don't think so on the whole. I mean, there's always going to be offense, and if anything, the league will always push for higher scoring. But, yeah, I mean, defenses are tending to catch up. I mean, like I mentioned, there's so much copycat going on, and there's so many schemes now adopted in Seattle, a lot more zone. Like I mentioned with McDermott, now cover three is a predominant set. Who would have ever thought that? And I think that's to counteract a lot of the passing and a lot of the mismatches in the passing game where we're talking about. But I still don't know that it's going to catch up on a dramatic undertrend or skew any numbers by any means. I still think there's enough quarterback talent and enough offensive talent out there that they're still going to find ways to score. There may be improvement schemes on those defenses, but yeah, I doubt they're going to be able to sway overall numbers as a whole this season.
All right, let's look at some futures here that you've got your eye on. And, of course, we'll talk more about the preseason and about composition of some of these rosters as we really get going. We've got week one of the preseason here this week. And for those that are listening, I certainly encourage you to keep your exposure very, very low this week because you're going to see a lot of undrafted free agents. You're going to see a lot of late-round draft picks deciding games for you in the second half. Probably in your best interest to wait a little bit, wait until week two, see how things kind of shake out a little bit. But, Joe, one team that we pretty much never have to worry about coming into a season is the Green Bay Packers. I mean, it's very obvious what this team brings to the table, of course, spearheaded by Aaron Rodgers. You're pretty heavy in the futures market here on Green Bay for 2017.
Yeah, the Packers and the Buccaneers are two teams I'm really say all in on the Packers. That's for sure. I've got the Super Bowl at five times now. It's still – believe it, plus 950. So if they actually get the deed done, I'm throwing that out there. But also their season win total, if it's 10.5, I don't care if you get it at 11, I think they're going over that. That not only is the roster back, I mean, they may miss a little bit on the O-line, but the addition of Martellus Bennett, this is the best tight end Aaron Rodgers played with since Jermichael Finley. And coincidentally, these two were both in the same draft class, I believe, Bennett coming out of A&M, and then, Jermichael Finley. I think he was a Texas kid. Both basketball talents, and this is the type of tight end I think Aaron Rodgers is just meant to play with. We're now broken records officially. It's three times. That big guy outflexed as a wideout, posing that mismatch. It's just going to be unfair for Aaron. I love the drafting of Jamal Williams, a power back that they could mix in with Ty Montgomery, who's a great receiving back. Defense will be shored up. I think that was the only reason they didn't go to the distance last year, Adam, is that they finally got caught on the defense. They met a team in Atlanta that could just score with them every series and keep answering back. Well, I like who they drafted. They're going to be healthier. It stinks when you lose your top corner, Sam Shields, week one to a concussion, and he never comes back. I think he may be done even. Still a street free agent. But, yeah, Green Bay's a team. I think they're firing all cylinders. They were hot at the end of last year. They're going to be hot again this year. Aaron Rodgers, man, he just performs miracles. So, I mean, you know, no big news for the listeners, I'm sure. But, yeah, Green Bay just seems to me like this is their window. This is their time.
Yeah, their season win total sitting 10.5 at DSI, plus 130 on the over. Obviously not a ton of margin for error where you need a team to go 11-5 or better. But if someone's going to do it, a team like Green Bay does make some sense. Plus 970 on their Super Bowl price at DSI. You mentioned the secondary, and not just the Sam Shields injury, but Quentin Rollins and Demarius Randall both took turns being out of the lineup last year due to injuries. So this is a team that not only will be better from a starting standpoint, but also from a depth standpoint. Because keep in mind, you know, when you lose a starter and the second stringer's got to come in and start, the third string guy might be somebody you signed off the practice squad the week before. So that is a very important consideration there with Green Bay. I do just want to mention one other thing. You mentioned Ty Montgomery, and I like the way that he's being used. I mean, he's a guy that can be a running back, can catch passes out of the backfield, obviously being a wide receiver. You know, he's got good speed and good quicks and good instincts being a kick returner at Stanford. Jamal Williams also, too, something to keep in mind about a guy like him, being a rookie out of BYU, you know, took some time off. He's had some time to grow up and mature. He's more like, you know, an adult than a lot of these NFL draft picks that are coming out. So, like you said, he's a guy that, you know, could have a pretty big say in what goes on with this offense. And when you talk about teams like Green Bay just adding depth, they don't need impact guys. They don't have to get, you know, the top free agents out there. They need to improve at the margins, and that's what Green Bay did this offseason.
And Jamal is a mature kid. I got the chance to talk to him in Mobile. Easily my best interview. Called me by my name twice. Had to meet my brother. I mean, this kind of, you know, like you said, a little bit more grown up, and he's a great pass blocker too. So I think that's really what Green Bay wants, is someone who's going to, hey, protect the bank. We got to take care of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the guy that basically dictates how far Green Bay does go this season. But again, like I said, they've done enough things to upgrade the depth and upgrade some of the positions that they needed to. All right, so the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a very interesting one to me that you like them. And you know, we talked about Dirk Cutter last season and some of the problems that he had, you know, transitioning over to being an NFL head coach for the first time. Todd Monken's not exactly, you know, the most experienced guy. Mike Smith, when he was in Atlanta, just didn't work out as a head coach. He's much more suited for a coordinator gig. But you do like the Buccaneers here. I mean, the NFC South looked like it was wide open the last couple of years. Atlanta's made some very good strides. Obviously, the, you know, NFC champion last year, and without Tom Brady, they'd be the Super Bowl champion. So what is it that you like so much about Tampa Bay this year to the point where you've taken them to win the NFC South?
Line, I think you're plus 335 is what I've got at five dimes. I love the additions, and I'm doing it again. I'm going back to the tight end. They already had a solid tight end in Cameron Brate. Adding O.J. Howard to this mix, Jameis Winston will have every weapon a quarterback desires, in my opinion. So that's first off, I think their defense will improve. It's just getting that pass rush. I think expecting more in Noah Spence this year is probably what I may be guilty of, but also the schedule. Open it up with the Bungles, the Jags, the Brownies. That they get that AFC East addition to their schedule. And then the NFC South also, it seems like it always figures that the team that was just on the precipice or just out of the playoffs never fails to win the division, or the team that was in last place. It's always a topsy-turvy NFC South, so that's definitely one reason I like to go for it. But I think this is another team offensively. They're just about to take that next step. They are poised to really blow up, and I think this is the year Jameis Winston kind of – it all clicks for him mentally. You know, DeSean Jackson, too. I mean, that's one of those type of players that I don't care if he could catch or not. Him running out there that fast, defenses have to respect it. And, yeah, this Buccaneers offense, I think, it's going to just open wide up. And it's another thing that you got to love the teams that are fortunate enough to retain the same offense year after year after year. And this will now be year three for Jameis in Dirk Cotter's system. So I think that is another – it's just a blessing to finally just be speaking Spanish for 3 years in a row and then not have to learn German the second year. And then, well, Portuguese is our new language this year because we're on our third coach. You know, this, I think this is really a great opportunity for the Buccaneers to kind of keep this staff together, keep this team together, and really take the step they're supposed to take.
All right, well, let's look at a couple of other futures that you're looking at here from a division standpoint. And by the way, the Bucs number over at DSI is plus 280, and as Joe said, plus 335 at five dimes. So make sure that you're shopping around for the best prices here on futures. Sometimes it'll be at DSI, sometimes it'll be at five dimes, sometimes it'll be at Bet Online. But you don't want to cost yourself, you know, the opportunity of value. So make sure that you do shop around for the best prices on these. The Pittsburgh Steelers to win the AFC North, they are chalk. You've got them listed here, minus 155. I mean, to me, you know, obviously I know that this assumes that nothing goes wrong, that Ben Roethlisberger stays healthy, that Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, excuse me, stay healthy. But, I mean, who can challenge this team? Can anybody challenge this team if it's healthy or at least moderately healthy?
Yeah, I don't like to pay that chalk, but I just don't see any other outcome. Like you said, there's no challengers. And then Joe Flacco with this mysterious back injury, that's bad news. The Bengals – losing Whitworth and going to those new tackles, I think the Bengals' offensive line has a chance to be really bad. And that's just unfortunate with all the, you know, skill position, star-level players they have. And then the Browns, think we'd all admit they're just still about a year or two away. This is basically the Steelers' division, strongest offensive line in the division. They've got receivers for days. I love backing up Le'Veon Bell with James Conner. And don't be surprised if James Conner plays quite a bit with Le'Veon Bell holding out, injury-prone. This could be a great little draft pick for Pittsburgh. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with Big Ben. I think it's just Butler, the defensive coordinator, catching those linebackers up. I think they really missed Cameron Hayward last year too. But yeah, not to waste too much time, I just think, like you mentioned, they are there's not challengers for their title, and I think they just kind of waltz into this division again.
So we talked a lot about the AFC West when we took a look at the San Diego Chargers. Really, ultimately, this looks like a two-horse race between the Oakland Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs. And, of course, they will be the Las Vegas Raiders here at some point. And, again, that'll take us probably a year and a half to actually get right. Oakland last year, you know, a lot of close wins, a lot of games where they were outgained and still found a way to win them. So it seems to me like a lot of people are actually looking to go against them this season. But Joe, you're looking to go against the grain and actually take them here to win the AFC West in the plus 150, plus 175 range.
And this is another similar situation that I think you nailed it. Two-horse race. Denver, problems on the O-line, problems at offense, still don't have a quarterback. You know, rather than going through all that, I think there's one player here, Carl Joseph, that really, he was just rebounding off that knee injury. I don't think he was himself. In his second year out of West Virginia, I'm expecting big plays from Carl Joseph. And then this offense just started clicking last year. I think sky's the limit. They've got an overpaid offensive line, but they're pretty doggone good too. So, and the depth that I think one thing I would caution listeners, I'm not expecting a huge season out of Marshawn Lynch. I think he's just another addition to their, you know, conglomerate of backs. Like, they really spread those carries around very evenly last year between Murray and Rashard and Washington. So I think they're going to share carries again. It's just Lynch is going to be their pile mover and red zone guy. No problem with that. It's just, I don't know anyone expecting 1,000-yard season from Lynch and, you know, 15 touchdowns might want to slow their roll. I think he's part of a good mix.
Well, we'll end our segment here, our first one with Joe Everett of the season, by talking about the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. And it's not a good thing to talk about the Jets right now. You're looking at under 4 wins for this team. Hard to find a team that lost more over the offseason than the New York Jets. I mean, you talk about losing a guy like Nick Mangold, who was obviously a great offensive lineman, a great captain of that offensive line when he was healthy. Brandon Marshall's gone. Darrell Revis is gone. You know, they have all kinds of other issues with this team at the quarterback position. Maybe Todd Bowles starting the year on the hot seat, which is unfortunate for him because I think this is a guy that did a tremendous job in his first year. Last year, a lot of circumstances went against him. You can't question the guy's passion. You can't question his enthusiasm. You can't question all the BS that he's had to deal with as the head coach of this team either. So, you know, hopefully he finds a soft landing spot somewhere if he does get a pink slip this season. But do the Jets have any redeeming qualities heading into this year?
Yeah, they've got some real good defensive linemen, but that is it. the one that you hit on the head is Nick Mangold. The other guy getting rid of, David Harris. Those two were locker room leaders, stalwarts. I mean, these guys, you come to them with questions. They have the answers. They are the leaders, the alpha dogs. And I just, getting rid of those two sends a message, and it permeates the whole room. That tells you we really are set our sights low this season. I like the draft pick, Jamal Adams. He's a good player. Nothing wrong with him. It's just the backs are old with Forte. Maybe Bilal Powell steals the show. The quarterbacks are terrible. Wide receiver room is bad. This whole mix seems just terrible to me. And unfortunately, the number's down to 4. I think way early in the season, it may have been 4.5, 5, mistakenly, but I still think 4 is free money. I think this is a team that has a very good shot of going winless, and even if they don't go winless, it will be 1-15 or 2-14. That 2-14 case scenario. So I'm still thinking, yeah, under 4. That's just the books giving out a little love for us.
Well, a lot of good thoughts here to open up the football daily shows here on Bang the Book Radio with Joe Everett from, as we mentioned, NFL Draft Bible, Fantistics. He's got all kinds of bylines everywhere. Joe, anything in the pipeline that you're writing here recently, or anything that you or that you're writing here soon, or anything that you've written recently that you want to point our listeners towards?
Oh, well, we do have an update for the prospectus for the college football. Unfortunately, Mr. Donnie Corley will no longer be part of the top 100. So that's always come out. You can check NFL Draft Bible for all my recent scouting reports. Got a couple hanging out there. And then Fantistics, my sleepers, my IDP sleepers article will be debuting this Wednesday. So if you want to get a look at that, check out InsiderFootball.com or Fantistics.
And you can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe W. Everett. Joe, great to get you back on the show here again. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We'll talk to you every Monday throughout the season, and have a good week, brother. Well, there you go. There's Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Also, as I mentioned there, Fantistics. Just want to mention that this show and all of our Bang the Book radio broadcasts are brought to you by DSI Sportsbook. We've got a new promo code offer for our radio show listeners out there. That is the promo code BTB25, BTB25. Get you a free $25 bet just for signing up. You can test drive. You can see how DSI works for you. You can take a look around. See if it's a place where you want to deposit. Because if you do decide to deposit, you'll get a 100% bonus for the sportsbook and a 100% bonus for the live casino. So you get the $25 free bet, max or 100% deposit bonus on the sportsbook, 100% bonus for the live casino. It's an A-plus rated sportsbook on the review sites out there. Easy-to-use mobile interface. They offer odds on just about everything. Football, you've got plenty of live betting stuff, all the major sports, politics, reality TV. They've got everything over there at DSI Sportsbook. So they're very good friends of ours. They're going to have tons of stuff, tons of props available for the Mayweather-McGregor fight coming up here later this month. So just tons of things going on. And look, you're going to hear us talk as we go throughout this season here on Bang the Book Radio about shopping around for the best prices, you know, and whether it's in the futures market where everybody obviously knows, and we talked about a little bit there in that segment with Joe, if you can get a plus 335 as opposed to a plus 285, that is obviously worth your while. It's very, very important to be able to do that. But even on a week by week and a game by game basis, to get a 7 instead of a 6.5, to get a 7 even money as opposed to a 7 minus 120, all of these things really help your bottom line. So you want to make sure that you have a lot of places to shop around at. So maybe you've got a Five Dimes account. Maybe you've got a Bet Online account. Maybe you've got a Bookmaker account. Get an account over at DSI Sportsbook. They're independent now from the Chris family of books, so they're going to have some different odds out there on some different games. So I certainly recommend you take advantage of that BTB25 promo code. I think that's something that's definitely worth your while over there at the website. One more segment left to go here for our August 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is what we'll call during the season our college football first look with Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going, brother? Good to talk to you again.
Hey, it's good to talk to you again too, man. It's been a nice summer here, but sure good to talk about football again. It seems like it's been quite a while, but it's not far from now.
No, you know what? It's kind of amazing because, and you and I have talked about this before off the show, and I've talked with other guests about this. The off season for football is just so short now. You know, a lot of times you used to think of it being like May, June. Obviously, you'd have the Golden Nugget games of the year coming out on the month of June. But now, I mean, you've got win totals up in May, and it sort of feels like, you know, you don't have an off season. You just have an extended preseason where throughout July and August, you're just kind of sitting there going, okay, I just want to see games now that matter.
Right, yeah. Now it's just waiting for the games. But, you know, it's difficult, like I told you, it's difficult if you handicap a bunch of different sports and then you're trying to get ready for it early. In some ways, I like that things come out early. In other ways, it makes it more difficult for me to get down on those games, at least the season win totals early on. But at the same time, it gives you more time to prep for the season. So certainly, you know, a lot going on here in the last few weeks for myself. Still have a lot more digging to do. And, you know, we'll continue to talk about the types of things and the processes, how we think the average handicapper should do it. And certainly looking forward to today's show and then going forward.
You know, I think one of the things that separates the guests and the professionals that we have on this show from our listeners, and this isn't a bad thing by any means. I certainly don't intend for it to come out that way. But I think for a lot of us here in the industry, our favorite part is the preseason. Our favorite part is doing that digging, doing that research, putting together those power ratings. For a lot of people, their favorite part is having the action on the games. And I can certainly understand both sides of the coin, but you know, it's so important to have that foundation, to have those power ratings, to have those thoughts, to be doing your research, reading previews from other people, reading the preseason magazines, all that stuff. That's the part that I love, because that's the part that really dictates, you know, how you're going to do that season. I mean, variance comes into play, and you know, obviously if you don't adjust properly, you have some issues during the season, but you, in my mind, based on what I've done over the last few years and the people that I associate with, getting that preseason prep work done and getting it to a point that you're happy with is the most important thing in the college football season.
Sure, yeah, definitely. And, yeah, I agree with you. I think that's my favorite part of the year, too. Obviously, like every other college football fan, I love the games as well. I mean, it's one of those things where you love the prep for the season and you love seeing the action as well. You know, if you don't have a good base to start with, you're going to have a hard time, even if you adjust well throughout the course of the season, doing well when it comes to college football betting, really any other sport. You know, you have to be really well prepared for the season. And, you know, that's why we talk about a lot of things like conference specialization, and it's hard to know every single team if you're just any old better out there. You know, as far as me, I try to know all the teams really well. Having said that, I still know some of the conferences better than the others, and I know that. You know, sometimes I go into it knowing that my power rating for that team is not as strong as the other one. It's one that I'm going to have to look to adjust, you know, as the season goes along. And then also, like you were hinting at there, I kind of like when you get this situation where I'm digging through these teams and I'm way higher on a team than everybody else, or I'm way lower on a team than everybody else. Obviously, I like to compare my ratings to other people, but it's nice when you have a little bit of a difference there and you feel pretty strongly about it as well.
No, absolutely. And that is one of the nice things. One of the fortunate benefits here of having this show and then having the network that I do have is I can compare things with other people, and we can compare and contrast and share with the listeners here on this show. And that's what I like so much, because a lot of the other shows out there in the industry just have, you know, your regular two people that host the show, and they just kind of banter back and forth, and that's that. But we bring a lot of different perspectives here onto the show, and conference specialization is a big part of it, like you said, because it's very important not just to know what you do well, but to know what you don't do well, because that's a key element of bankroll management, knowing that, you know, hey, I can probably put two units down in Conference USA or the Sun Belt or the MAC because I dug deep into these conferences. I know these teams. I focused a majority of my research on these teams, whereas maybe you'll play one unit in the SEC or you'll stay off altogether because, you know, tighter market, you don't feel as comfortable with those teams. These are all really important things, and they're all part of that curve that you have to go through as a handicapper from when you're starting out to starting to really take this thing seriously to, you know, making some significant money with what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. You got to know where your strengths are, and it's okay to pass on certain conferences, on certain games. It's certainly something that I do more frequently than the average handicapper is pass in those really big games. You know, you can certainly take some heat for it occasionally, but I think in the long run, it's a good way to go about it. You know, you stay really disciplined, you fire, and you can play some big games when you really like them. You know, usually for me, that's totals more often than it is sides. But, you know, it's almost always those under-the-radar games. You know, a lot of my newer clients will say, wow, you know, you have a top-rated play on, you know, Troy versus Louisiana Monroe. And, you know, yeah, I mean, that's the type of games that I usually find more value in. And I think it makes a lot of sense with the conference specialization thing. Like you said, I mean, it's going to be really hard to find some little hidden nugget about a team in the SEC. I mean, it's really not going to happen. It's going to be out there. Everybody's going to know about it. The odds makers going to know everything to know about that game. But if you find something about a team like a Louisiana Monroe or something like that out of the Sun Belt, you can really hone in on something and make money for a while. It's going to take a little bit of time to adjust. It's like we talked about in college basketball. Obviously, there's not as many teams in college football, but still, there's going to be some under-the-radar teams in college football when you compare it to, you know, or especially in certain conferences, especially when you compare it to, you know, Big Ten, SEC, or even more so than the NFL, which obviously it's really hard to find something under the radar then.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about Conference USA and the Sun Belt here today, sort of trying to push that conference specialization theme as we get going with the daily shows here once again. But before we do that, Kyle, I want to talk to you about the overall setup of your power ratings. This is something that we've talked about in previous years on the show. And in fact, you and I actually started doing a college football podcast. We're almost approaching, I believe, our fifth anniversary of doing the first college football podcast for bangthebook.com, which is absolutely incredible to think about. But in terms of setting up power ratings here, you know, did you make any adjustments to your usual format? If so, what were they? And if not, you know, what is it that you do to come up with your numbers?
Yeah, just slight tweaks for me. I've done the same thing here for quite a while, quite a few years. But what I do now is I adjust things a little bit more. I have a little bit more variation in my numbers than I did in the past, especially when it comes to coaching. I feel like coaching matters even more than I thought it did a few years ago in college football. You know, I vary my number that I give for the coaching staff quite a bit more than I did a few years ago. So, you know, just a step-by-step thing, what I do now, at the end of each year, I go back and look at the team's power rating, and I adjust it a little bit based on things such as fumble luck, turnover margin, close wins, close losses that could, you know, affect public perception, things like that. So you end with a number at the end of the last season, and you go into the next season, and you break down every team and give a point value to each position group. So, for example, 15 points for offensive line, defensive line, coach, et cetera. That's the way I've done that for a long time. Like I said, the thing that I do now is I vary the numbers a bit more. My numbers were a little bit more uniform in the past, and I felt like that didn't give me as many spots to fire on games as what I'd like. I wanted to be a little bit more opinionated about certain groups. So, and I really do think that coaches play a really big role in point spread in college football, because it also in college football, you have coaches who will run up the score a lot more than you have people that will do the same thing in the NFL. You know, they're looking for style points, things like that. So you have to try to figure out who you think those coaches might be and remember that type of thing. And as something I can't stress enough is depth really matters a lot when you're making power ratings. You know, at a school like Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, they lose a really good defensive lineman. Hey, you know, it sucks, but the drop-off is not going to be that big. You know, you take a team like Lafayette or something like that, Louisiana Lafayette out of the Sun Belt, they lose a star defensive lineman, it's going to be a lot bigger drop-off. You know, injuries are going to happen, so factoring that into your power ratings with the depth of your unit is a really good idea to start with. And what I've also started doing is I highlight my teams that I'm less sure about. So I'll keep an extra close eye on those teams and adjust them quicker. And then other teams I feel pretty strongly about. So if they come out there and play a poor game, even though I have them rated pretty highly at the beginning, if I feel strongly about that team, I'm going to adjust less than what I would in another circumstance. You know, like we said beforehand, if you prep really well for the season, you have to have some opinions that you're stronger on versus others. And then I think it's always a good idea to try to compare your power ratings to others that are available. You can get some pretty good free ones on the web from several sources. I think a good way to put it is if you're way off from a lot of other people, you certainly want to be sure you're the one that's right. You know, more information is a good thing. And, you know, more often than not, if you're way off from everybody else, then you better look into what's going on there unless you feel really strongly about it. And then, you know, during the season, I take a look at the closing line to see how far my line was off. That's certainly a good thing to look at. You know, you don't want to be way off from the closing line too often. You want the money to come in the direction that you would expect. And then, you know, keep in mind that this is something I haven't talked about too much on the show here in the past, but something I wanted to point out when you're making a line for a game, keep in mind that, you know, when a total is really high or a total is really low, especially based on weather, your spread projection has to move as well. So you say a game is totaled and then it's bet down to 42 because there's, you know, epic wind, you know, there's wind all over the place, rain. Then you have to move your spread projection down too. If it was minus 10 before, it may be minus 7 now. So that's the type of thing you need to keep in mind as well.
No, that's a really good point because we had some of those games with a hurricane rolling through the Carolinas last year, and some of those totals moved – I want to say maybe like the North Carolina State Notre Dame total moved like 10 points or something like that. It was some absurd kind of movement, yeah. But it was obviously the right movement. And of course, Brian Kelly kept trying to throw the football, which is kind of a microcosm of why Notre Dame went 4-8 last year. But, you know, that's definitely a very important point to make. And one of the things I do want to focus on as we go throughout the season here is that process of making adjustments, because that's something that I struggle with as well. You know, I can put together a power rating in the preseason that I'm very comfortable with, but determining how much to move a team up or down, whether I move them a point, 2 points, 4 points, 7 points, you know, over the course of 2, 3, 4 weeks, you know, that's something that I do struggle with. And that is something that, you know, we should definitely spend some more time on here once we actually get into the season. All right, let's talk a little bit of Conference USA here, because we have, I believe, 101 of 130 college football teams. We have their win totals up over at bangthebook.com with season previews. You covered Conference USA for us, so that's a conference that you've been able to do a little bit of a deep dive with. What stood out to you about that group of five league?
First of all, I think Marshall's underrated. I think they're the most underrated team in this league. Their win total was 5. Now it's juiced really big, but I'd certainly like Marshall over 5 a lot. I think Marshall is a team that has way too much talent on defense to be rated that lowly in a conference like Conference USA. You know, this is a conference where almost nobody plays defense. When Marshall's picking up guys that previously played at, you know, Alabama and Miami and places like that, or previously signed with them at least, you know that they have some really good talent. You know, those kind of players, if they sign at a place like that, they have to be very talented. Marshall obviously played really poorly last season. At the end of last year, that was one of them that I adjusted up in my power ratings. I knew they couldn't be that bad again, or I certainly don't think they can be that bad again. Their offense is not that great, but I think that their defense is going to be really good this year. And like I said, in Conference USA, I think that's really important. I think that Western Kentucky, I think they're a good team, but they certainly have a lot more questions than they've had the last couple years. You know, a new coaching staff, you know, we'll see how they do with that. The offense is still going to be really good. Mike White, a really good quarterback. I think the defensive line is definitely weaker than last year. They're probably going to give up more points than they did a year ago. You know, Western Kentucky, when you think about them, you think about all about offense, and it certainly makes sense. I mean, they've scored a ton of points, but Western Kentucky, what really made them get a lot better the last couple of years was their defense improved quite a bit. So we'll see if that continues here. I'm also really curious to see a team like Western Kentucky, you know, what do they do with their pace of play and how does their efficiency on offense go with a new coaching staff? You know, they actually didn't play that fast last year. They were just so efficient on offense. And then you have another really efficient offense in Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech, I think, is going to be very good again. They lost their quarterback. I think the new quarterback's going to be fine. Skip Holtz has done a good job there. I think Louisiana Tech's good futures value to take here to win Conference USA. I think Conference USA is a little bit more wide open here. I don't think Western Kentucky is as much better as they were last year compared to the rest of the pack.
Two teams I want to key in on because they're perfect examples of stuff that I want to talk about with my other guests as we go throughout the week here. So I'm glad that we can open up this conversation with you. Let's look at Marshall first, because they're the first team that you mentioned. Look, this is a Marshall team that was 33-8 from 2013 through 2015. Last year, they were 3-9. So you have this foundation there in Huntington, West Virginia, where Marshall's getting a lot of great recruits. Doc Holliday's doing a fantastic job. Yeah, they've had some quarterback losses. I mean, losing Raheem Cato obviously didn't help them a whole lot. But this is still a team that's been one of the top recruiting programs in the conference. They obviously still have lots of talent. They have a guy that's won as a coach before. How do you rate a team like that that went 3-9 last year? Seems like they kind of bottomed out. I mean, that was probably about as bad as it could get for Marshall. So how do you rate a team like that? Because when you look at the body of work from last year, they weren't a good team. I mean, they gave up over 35 points per game. So what do you do based on, you know, the number that you finished last year with compared to the number that you're looking at here now?
Well, you have to consider last year an outlier, or else, you know, I mean, if you factored last year into it too much, there's no way you could be as high on Marshall as what I am here. I think that last year was kind of a snowball effect for them. You know, things started going bad, and then They couldn't get it stopped. But like you said, they've had so much success in the past. I think that you look at it with multi-year view here, and you know that Marshall's getting better talent than most of the teams in Conference USA. It's also a school that gets some really good fan support. You know, Marshall, they're pretty serious about football there, and I think that they have a good home field advantage. Marshall's a team to me that, you know, they stand out to me because that defense is so much better than a lot of them in Conference USA. And like I say, I know the defense was bad last year. The defense had quite a few injuries last year. They have a lot of new faces that are going to be really good here this year. Really, really good linebackers and pass defense there. I think that, you know, in Conference USA, you see a lot of teams that can sling it around. I don't think people are going to be able to sling it around on Marshall like they do a lot of teams in Conference USA. And to me, that makes a difference. You know what a lot of teams are going to want to do in this conference. You know, you have a team like Old Dominion who runs a lot or who should run a lot this year. But in general, most of the teams in this conference are going to throw a lot. So, you know, once we get in conference play, the fact that Marshall's strength is their secondary, I think will certainly help them quite a bit.
All right, now Western Kentucky is the other team. I mean, when you look at Western Kentucky and you look at the coaches that they've had recently, Willie Taggart, Bobby Petrino, Jeff Brohm, these are all really good head coaches. Taggart, obviously, now at Oregon, Petrino doing his thing at Louisville, and Brohm now at Purdue. So you've got a Western Kentucky team that is clearly loaded with talent, because these guys don't just get Power 5 conference jobs because they have the record with wins and losses. They do it because they're good recruiters. That's how they get the wins. They're able to build these programs up, bring in the necessary talent. Big schools are going to recognize that. Therefore, they go out there and make some coaching changes and get these group of five guys that have, you know, built up their respective programs. So Mike Sanford walks in to a very, very good situation at Western Kentucky. There is a ton of talent here. That being said, we talk about it all the time. We key in on guys that can't maximize talent, whether it's on the football side, like a Jim Mora Jr. at UCLA, or on the basketball side, like all the guys that we like to beat up, Rick Barnes and, the others that kind of escape me right now. How do you approach a team like Western Kentucky? Yeah, there you go. There's another one. But how do you approach a team like Western Kentucky that clearly has talent? Now you're asking a different chef to put the ingredients together, so to speak.
Yeah. To me, there's a lot bigger unknown there, and that they're one of the teams that I would adjust quicker in power ratings because, you know, what are they going to do as far as the scheme change? I mean, you would assume that, you know, I've read up on this. You would assume that they're going to keep it as common as they can to last year. I mean, why would they change their offense from last year? I mean, occasionally you'll find a team where it seems like, you know, they change something when it's going well. You know, one that sticks out to me right now that I was looking at a lot yesterday was Georgia Southern. You know, they got a new coach last year, and for some reason they changed the way they played, and it didn't work at all. You know, I don't think they're going to do that at Western Kentucky, but I still want to see. Let's see what they do. It's good to point out, too, Western Kentucky, I mean, Mike White's a really good quarterback. But they have some really good running backs as well, some good depth there. Furby and Allen, Baker, you know, this is going to be a really good team, both at quarterback and running back, and obviously at wide receiver, they're not as good as they were last year. To me, the biggest question mark about Western Kentucky, though, is a new defensive coordinator. I think the defensive coaching staff have done a really good job there at Western Kentucky. I really want to see how good the Hilltoppers are on defense here this year. I think they're going to take a step back. I'm just not sure how big that step will be.
One more team I want to talk about in Conference USA here, because I know you wrote about them. You haven't mentioned them here, and I know that another guest I have on the show later this week, Sports Cheetah, took a position on their under-season win total. I am on the opposite side with this team, so I'm kind of curious to see how that one plays out. But Middle Tennessee, now this is a team that lost Brent Stockstill last year, head coach Rick Stockstill's kid, very good quarterback, probably an NFL-caliber prospect here. He's only a junior. He won't be a first-round pick or anything like that, but he could go day two, certainly go day three, and maybe make it onto a practice squad or be a backup somewhere. But when he went out, Middle Tennessee totally collapsed defensively. So when you look at what happened with this team at the end of last year, they started giving up a ton of points. They were playing shootouts. They were getting lucky to win games. They were getting blown out in other ones. What do you do with a team like Middle Tennessee that now has its quarterback back, has one of the best players in the conference in Richie James? You know, do you look at that team and say, okay, you know, I'm going to be conservative with them because I want to see and I'll be ready to adjust? Or do you take a stronger preseason position?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, Brent Stockstill is a tremendous quarterback. I think Richie James probably is the best player in this conference. You know, this is a team that's going to score a lot of points. I mean, they are going to score points on everybody in this conference. I really like Tony Franklin there at offensive coordinator. Really good hire there by Stockstill. They have a new defensive coordinator in Scott Schaefer. He's talked a lot about this defense being more aggressive. They've kind of been a bend but don't break type defense here of late, and he wants to change that and then be more aggressive, try to get more turnovers, things like that. You know, to me, they're a hard team to power rate as well, because so when he's in there and healthy, this team should be able to throw on just about anybody. But my question mark for Middle Tennessee is whether they're going to be able to run the ball like they had, like they did last year. Itavius Mathers was there last year, and he's gone. A couple of years ago, Middle Tennessee only averaged 3.8 yards per carry. Last year, 6.0 yards per carry. You know, the offensive line won't be as good as last year. The passing game is going to be elite. Are they going to have a running game to keep people honest? I mean, they're going to be able to win quite a few games just with their passing game and outscoring people. But against some of the better teams they play, they're going to need some balance there. I would say I'm pretty neutral on Middle Tennessee, so I guess I'll come in on the middle. I don't have any real strong opinion on the season win total as far as an over or an under.
I like the hire of Scott Schaefer, who was formerly the head coach there at Syracuse. That should help them. And the last point I'll make here about Conference USA, and I like that you brought this up. You talked about coaches and being more you know, aggressive in terms of the way that you rate coaches. That doesn't just mean the head coach to everybody out there. That includes the coordinators as well. When you get a guy like Scott Schaefer that says, okay, we're going to play more aggressively, and you look at this defense and say, well, you gave up almost 36 points per game. You gave up 450 yards per game. You know, now what? Are you going to be a high-risk, high-reward type of defense? How does that factor into the way that you handicap this team from a power rating standpoint? And then, of course, you know, the adjustments you have to make from a total standpoint, because they may have more turnovers, but if they're blitzing more often, if they're playing, you know, more aggressive to play single coverage on the outside, probably going to get burned more often too.
Yeah, a totals perspective, I definitely am looking to play overs with Middle Tennessee. The thing that I worry about is I think a lot of people will be looking to play overs with Middle Tennessee. I think they're going to have some really high totals here this year. You know, I don't blame them for trying to set up a new, more aggressive defense. I think when your numbers are that bad, you have to try something different. You know, I think it's pretty frustrating teams that do the same thing year in year, year after year, and then they just have the same results. They're really bad. So I think it's certainly a good move. But like you say, the more chances you take, I mean, you might get a couple more pick sixes, and you're also going to get burnt for some really big plays. So, you know, Middle Tennessee State's going to have big plays on offense as well. So I think they could have some high-scoring games. One more team I did want to mention, I'll say real quick. Southern Miss, to me, is a team that I think they may be a little bit overrated by most people from a PR standpoint at the beginning of the season. If you just look at their turnover margin from last year, you would think the team was underrated. So I think some people are going to upgrade them a little bit too much just based on that. But, you know, look at it. Southern Miss has been terrible at taking care of the football for many years now. At some point, you start to wonder if it's just, you know, more than bad luck. They don't value the football. And defensively, to me, they run a 4-2-5 defense, but their linebackers are a major weakness. You know, I think if you're going to run a 4-2-5 and just have those linebackers there in the middle and have two weak linebackers, I don't like your chances of having a good defense. And then also, Southern Miss has a big question mark at quarterback. You know, there's going to be a big question mark to see how their quarterback play goes, because when they had the injury to quarterback last year, it didn't go well.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk a lot about Conference USA because, you know, you and I sort of fell in love with the AAC and loved all their head coaching hires and thought that was a conference really going in the right direction. Now that everybody knows about the AAC, now that it's the sixth power conference and it basically brands itself as that, it did that at Media Days. You know, we'll talk about the AAC, but Conference USA is one of those ones now where you've got some interesting coaching hires. You've got some interesting things going on with some of these teams. You got a situation like Florida Atlantic. I'm sure we'll talk about them a lot this year with Lane Kiffin and Kendall Briles. That's going to be a much more exciting team to watch. So Conference USA, while not a great conference overall, when you look at a power ratings 1 through 130 standpoint, you're not going to find a whole lot of teams that are in the top half. But, you know, you're going to find situations where, at the very least, there's going to be a lot more interest and intrigue about these teams, especially toward the bottom of the conference. Kyle, let's talk about the Sun Belt here. You know, I actually just finished writing my Troy Trojan season win total yesterday evening. I wanted to make sure I got that in before we talked about that team here on today's show. And, you know, I talked about a team in Marshall where, you know, you've got an established talent base, a head coach that's had success. They're coming off of a really bad year. You've got a team like Western Kentucky, again, established talent base, but you don't know what's going on with the head coaching situation. Now you've got Troy, who won 10 games last year. They hadn't won more than 8 games since 2009. So some new heights for this program for Neil Brown. Became the first Sun Belt team ever to be ranked in the AP Top 25 last year. To me, that makes them a hard team to rate for this season because they bring back a lot of returning production. But we talk about this all the time. One of the hardest things to do in college football is sustain success year after year unless you're a blue blood program. So what do you think about the Troy Trojans this year?
Yeah, I'm higher on Troy than I think most people will be. I like the fit that they have at quarterback in Brandon Silvers. You know, just from a PR standpoint, I'll give people an example here of what I do with my power ratings here. I give Troy 12.5 points at quarterback in my PRs. I think Brandon Silvers is a really good fit here. The depth is a little bit questionable. I could have rated them even higher. I think Silvers could be the best quarterback in this conference. Obviously, Linehan at Idaho would be the other one that could be up there. But if Silver stays healthy, I think he could set some records there at Troy this year, especially because the wide receivers are so good. The best group of receivers in the Sun Belt, in my opinion. I don't think it's even close. You know, Troy has really good depth at wide receiver. I gave them 8 points at wide receiver. You go back to running back, they got 4.5 yards per carry last year after 3.8 a year before. Everybody's back from last year. I give them 7.5 points there at running back. Maybe that's a little high because they're not a great group of running backs. If I'm high anywhere, I would say that's where I would be a little too high. But we'll see about that. The offensive line, they lost their tackles from last year, which is pretty important. They only allowed 8 sacks last year. Those two were obviously a big reason why if they're the right and left tackles. I still think they're a really good unit. I give them 11.5. In my power ratings. Turning over to the defense, they added in a junior college transfer who originally came from Ole Miss. I think he'll do well, Clemens. This is a defensive line last year that only allowed 3.4 yards per carry. I really like Troy's defensive coaching staff. I think they've done a really good job there. I think the defensive line is certainly weaker than they were last year, though, and I gave them 9 points for the defensive line. The linebackers, pretty good young talent, but very, very inexperienced. I gave them 5 points at linebacker. I think that's their biggest weakness. And at DB, 52.7% completion percentage last year. I'm going to call them even with App State for the best in the Sun Belt. And I power ranked them with 6.5 there. So, and then when it comes to coaching, I've been really impressed by the job Neil Brown's done here. He hasn't done it for long enough for me to give him an even higher rating than this, but I give him 11 points for coaching. So overall, that gives Troy an overall PR of 71. I think that's probably higher than most people would be. I think Troy's offense is going to be better than it was last year. The defense may not be quite as good. They did have a plus 10 turnover margin last year, so they did get a little bit lucky there. That's one of the things that I have as a little bit of a pitfall as to being so high on them. But I do think Troy is going to be good this year.
You've got Troy about 1.5 better than I do. I have them at 69.5. Is App State number one in the conference for you, or is Troy number one?
Yeah, App State 71.5.
Okay. So you have App State a half point better there than Troy. I have App State at 72. So I've got them 2.5 points better than Troy. Just for comparison purposes here, obviously, I mean, I don't know if either one of us are completely right about those ratings for those two teams. But, you know, again, you want to make sure that you've got a baseline. You want to make sure that you have a situation where, you know, you set yourself up to have this conference power rated accurately. And, of course, those two teams don't even play each other. So it's kind of irrelevant what the difference is between them, at least at this stage of the game, because one of the things that you want to do with your power ratings is set up spreads for each game. That way you can determine how many the projected wins would be in that game. and then you can go from there in terms of setting up win totals. But I'll ask you this here. You know, you've got a Troy team that, like I said, hasn't really sustained success since, you know, pretty much 2008 through 2010. Larry Blakeney was there forever. Neil Brown inherited a 3-9 team, went to 4-8, went to 10-3. In that respect, Kyle, you know, do you sort of look at Troy and say, you know, okay, there's talent here, but, or do you say, hey, there's talent here and they should probably, you know, be able to sustain what they did last season?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I mean, you know, it's easy to say they went 10-3 a year ago. Maybe they won't be as hungry as they were last year. At the same time, you know, you could say this team has tasted success. They know how to do it. I mean, the Sun Belt's a weak conference, let's be honest. And there are three teams in the Sun Belt that are way better than anybody else. You know, when I'm doing my PRs, it's pretty amazing, you know, the drop-off after you go behind App State, Troy, and Arkansas State. You know, there's a big drop-off there in the Sun Belt. So, you know, I think Troy is going to have quite a bit of success kind of by default that, you know, they play a really weak schedule. Just there's a lot of teams there that Troy is going to outclass. So to me, you know, there's certainly a risk that Troy could slip back a little bit. I'm not necessarily saying I think they'll win 10 games again, but I think Troy is going to be a good team. And against the spread, I don't think they'll be overrated.
Yeah, I've got them at about 9.13 wins. Their season win total was 8.5 with the over minus 130. And, you know, part of that is because they're so much better than the rest of the conference, like you said, outside of App State and Arkansas State. But the other part of it is just the schedule. I mean, in non-conference, they play Alabama State, who they'll beat. They play Akron, who they should beat. You know, they have some games that they should definitely take care of business in from a non-conference standpoint. Before we wrap things up here for today, I do want to talk a little bit of NFL because we've got the preseason here starting Wednesday night. I don't really include the Hall of Fame game because absolutely nobody plays in the Hall of Fame game. We've got some NFL preseason here coming up on Wednesday. Do you dabble a lot in the preseason, Kyle, or do you just kind of leave it be?
Yeah, I don't do too much in the preseason. I know some people, you know, play a lot of preseason, do a really good job with it. You know, hats off to them. I think it's certainly a different animal. And, you know, I have a hard time, you know, if you don't hear from that coach, you know, what they're going to do, and that's something you put in our notes, like, you know, who do you trust based on what they say? You know, some of the coaches, I'm not even sure I can trust. You know, some of the new guys, they may say something like, we're going to play guys for this long, and it ends up being a lot less than that. You know, some guys that have an established record, you know, you can pretty much tell what they're going to do because they've done it every time before. So, you know, past record of coaches is the best way to handicap the preseason, in my opinion. You need to know which coaches care about the preseason, and also more specifically and more importantly, which games in the preseason they're going to care about. Because, I mean, you and I both know that, you know, you get to week three, that's a really big game in the preseason. You know, not too many people care a lot about week one or week four in the preseason. So go back and look and see how every coaching staff, every coach has done straight up an ATS by week in the past. I think that's a good way to look at things to start with. New coaches I generally avoid. I know some people like to back them just because they think I have a, you know, a chip on their shoulder, something to prove. But, you know, I like to have some kind of past history to go off of. One thing I did want to point out is I've been looking pretty closely at totals in the preseason, NFL preseason totals. The lowest of totals are good over leans. So long-term, the over has actually hit it a little bit better than 55% on totals of 37 or lower. And that percentage actually goes up without bad weather. So, you know, you include something like wind and rain, that's going to go down. But totals of 37 or lower would be a good way to look to the over, just because it's gotten so extremely low at that point that, you know, any kind of semblance of an offense can usually put up, you know, a decent amount of points. Having said that, you know, it's pretty tough to bet totals in the preseason because, you know, you can get third and fourth string guys in there and they really don't even know the offense very well. So I really only like to play the over with teams who have backups and even third stringers who know the system fairly well. I don't want somebody out there who looks completely lost.
That totals point is really interesting for a couple of different reasons. I mean, for one thing, when you look at officiating in the preseason, you have some young officials that want to open some eyes. And then, of course, you have the usual mandates at the start of the season. We're going to call this. We're going to focus on this. And with the way that the NFL is trending nowadays, generally they're going to focus on calling things on the defense. So, you know, that's a situation where you're going to get some free yardage there in the preseason. And free yardage when everyone's out of sync is, you know, a very important thing. So I think that probably has a little bit to do with what's gone on with some of those totals, just because, you know, they try to police the game a little bit more strictly, try to protect the players a little bit more because it is the preseason and, you know, no one wants to see anyone get hurt during the preseason. One other thing I want to mention that you talked about is, you know, paying attention to how coaches have done in certain weeks. Another element to that is sometimes there can be some pressure from above. If it's a home preseason game, you know, you may see the starters play a little bit longer because they want to draw up interest in the team. You know, want to try and pad those stat lines a little bit of, you know, Andrew Luck was 7 for 7 for 85 yards and 2 touchdowns in the 2 series that he played. You know, you try to drum up a little bit of interest, drum up some ticket sales, that type of thing. It's kind of a lot like spring training baseball, where if a game is televised back home, there's a little bit of pressure to say, hey, put as many of the stars in the lineup as you possibly can. Similar concept kind of applies here to the preseason, I would say.
Yeah, and I think that would be the case, especially if that team had not played well the week before. You know, if there's more pressure on them, maybe people are a little bit lower on them because they were so bad the week before. Maybe they push it a little bit farther with a guy like Andrew Luck or whoever their star quarterback is than they would have otherwise. And that could be a good time to back that team, especially if they did poorly the week before. I think if that team's been playing really well and things have been going smoothly before that, then, you know, they're not going to push it as much even at home. So, yeah, that's certainly an angle to keep in mind as well.
A lot of good thoughts here to get Kyle Hunter back into the mix here on Bang the Book Radio with our college football first look. And that is the name of the segment, but we will talk some NFL as we go throughout the season here as we do get closer to that. But Kyle of HunterSportsPicks.com, what's going on over there at the website right now?
Well, getting everything ready for the season, obviously. I've just put my college football packages together and NFL packages as far as pricing for this year. I've had some people ask, certainly had a good season last year in football. The NFL had a good season. College football had a really good season. All my totals this year, totals last year were 70 and 44, 61%. First of all, I'm not going to do that well every year. I'm just going to be honest and say that from the outright. You know, people ask me, you know, let's look at the record from the past and let's, you know, move it forward. So how much would I make? You know, these are things, you know, it's not going to be straight every single year. You know, I'll have a down year. I'll have good years. I'm good at totals in college football. That doesn't mean I'm going to win every single year or I'm going to win that much every single year. But my totals package for this year is $499.99 for every single college football total from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. So if you're interested in that, you can email me, Kyle@HunterSportsPicks.com, or probably the easiest way to get a hold of me a lot of times is at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. I'm on there pretty often. So shoot me a message if you're interested in that. And, you know, we'll talk going forward about other things I have going on. But right now, pretty deep in the preseason research stage.
So that was, you said 70 and 44 for college football totals last year?
Yeah, 70 and 44 last year.
So that's less than $5 per pick to get that totals package. So, you know, you're not going to find that out there anywhere else, especially with the volume that you play and the success that you do have with those college football totals. So that's definitely a good thing to invest in here for the upcoming 2017 season. You can follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. Kyle, great to get you back on the air here again, man. Glad we're doing this week after week, and I'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
Hey, I look forward to it. Thanks, man.
There you have it. There's some great stuff there with Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll hear from Brian Leonard. We're going to chat some Mac. We're going to talk about some of those similar types of teams that we just talked about with Kyle, looking at some teams that, you know, have had some coaching changes, have had losses of some significant talent, things of that sort. And also another angle to look at with coaches in their second years. That's something where generally a lot of people say, hey, second year, they've got some recruits in there. They're not changing schemes. It's going to be a good time to buy that team. We'll talk about a couple of those teams in the MAC on tomorrow's show with Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Then I'm also going to fill in the gap at the end of the show for however long that is, looking at some Major League Baseball stuff. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.